Toby Underwood, Stormbreaker by Anthony Horowitz. 11 o'clock. Alex burst out of the house and stopped in the open air, taking stock of his surroundings. He was aware of alarms ringing, guards running towards him, and two cars, still some distance away, tearing up the main drive heading for the house. He just hoped that although it was obvious something was wrong, nobody would yet know what it was. They shouldn't be looking for him, at least, not yet. That might give him the edge. It looked like he was already too late. Sale's private helicopter had gone. Only the cargo plane was left. If Alex was going to reach the Science Museum in London in the 59 minutes left to him, he had to be on it. But the cargo plane was already in motion, rolling slowly away from its chocks. In a minute or two, it would go through the pre-flight tests. Then it would take off. Alex looked around and saw an open-top army jeep parked on the drive near the front door. There was a guard standing next to it, a cigarette dropping out of his hand, looking around to see what was happening, but looking the wrong way. Perfect. Alex sprinted across the gravel. He had brought a weapon from the house. One of Sale's harpoon guns had floated past him just as he'd left the room, and he'd snatched it up, determined to have something he could use to defend himself with at last. It would have been easy to shoot the guard right then. A harpoon in the back, and the jeep would be his. But Alex knew he couldn't do it. Whatever Alan Blunt and MI6 wanted to turn him into, he wasn't ready to shoot in cold blood. Not for his country. Not even to save his own life. The Understudy by David Nichols. What's French for I'm sorry? Don't know. We haven't done I'm sorry yet. Well, when you learn it, will you tell me? Sophie nodded solemnly. She sat some distance away from her father in the small, smoky green room. With its ashtrays, plastic cups, and old tabloids, it seemed a particularly grubby and inappropriate environment for a child. And Sophie clearly felt this too, sitting awkwardly on the edge of an orange stackable chair, staring blankly at the page of her book. Out of compassion, Stephen had been allowed to step out of his costume for a while, but they wouldn't have time to reapply his makeup, so he still had whiskers and a round mask of red and brown in the centre of his face. With some justification, perhaps, Sophie was clearly finding it hard to look at him. So all those kids are from the famous after-school drama society, yeah? Sophie nodded. And you're sure you don't want to come back with me and join the others? Sophie shook her head. Because I thought it might be a laugh, me and you, performing together for the first time. Our screen debut together. I thought it might be fun.
It's not fun, Sophie mumbled at the floor. It's just stupid.
Stephen leant forward in his chair, touched her on the knee. It's just pretending, Sophie. That's what I do. That's my job.
Well, it's a stupid job.
No, it isn't, Sophie. Not always, he said quietly, adding weakly, and don't say stupid. Say silly. Sophie glared at him, her eyes wide and red.
But it isn't silly, though. It's stupid. Stupid, 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 Sophie. Stupid, stupid,
Sophie, don't.
Stupid, stupid, stupid. Stupid!
The door to the green room opened. The floor manager showed Alison and Colin into the room, both in intimidating heavy overcoats and dark suits. And for a moment, Stephen had the definite sensation that he was being visited in prison. Alison glanced momentarily at Stephen, narrowed her eyes dismissively, then held her arms out to Sophie. Come here, sweetheart, she said. And head down, Sophie crossed the room into her mother's arms. Lord of the Flies by William Golding. The tide swelled in over the rain-pitted sand and smoothed everything with a layer of silver. Now it touched the first of the stains that seeped from the broken body, and the creatures made a moving patch of light as they gathered at the edge. The water rose further and dressed Simon's coarse hair with brightness. The line of his cheek silvered, and the turn of his shoulder became sculptured marble. The strange attendant creatures, with their fiery eyes and trailing vapours, busied themselves round his head. The body lifted a fraction of an inch from the sand, and a bubble of air escaped from the mouth with a wet plop. Then it turned gently in the water. Somewhere over the darkened curve of the world, the sun and moon were pulling, and the film of water on the Earth planet was held, bulging slightly on one side, while the solid core turned. The great wave of the tide moved further along the island, and the water lifted, softly, surrounded by a fringe of inquisitive bright creatures, itself a silver shape beneath the steadfast constellations, Simon's dead body, moved out towards the open sea.